Hi, this is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be asking the question, how do you check initiative and start a fight in D&D? You know, there's a ton of different options across different games and editions. We're going to tell you all of our experiences and which option is clearly the best. All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we discuss initiative, the one rule that always goes first is my announcement about our after party chat. That's right. At the end of this show, we will be hosting our after party chat, which is a live video chat that Dan and I host on our Discord server. And you can join in. You can do so simply by becoming a patron. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/wanderingdms. Join at any tier. You'll get an invite to our private Discord server. Get that all set up throughout the show. And about 10 minutes after the show or so, we take a little break in between. Dan and I will be online to talk to all of our patrons, and we hope to see you there.
We love that. We just have the best patrons. Thanks to our patron, Bacrius, for checking in that we're currently live on YouTube, Twitch, and Restream. We appreciate that so much. So, initiative. I think we should just start with original D&D. I think we should look at the core source, the
great
text. And see what did, 1974, what did original D&D do for initiative? We can move on from there.
Awesome.
Right.
There it is.
Absolutely nothing.
For those listening to the podcast right now, indeed, not found. No information whatsoever. Initiative does not exist. In OD&D, at least in the original source.
If you do a text, the word never shows up. Not once. Yeah. The word is never mentioned.
I know you're our expert in this area, and I'm going to assume that this is because it's in fact covered by chainmail.
Maybe it doesn't explicitly say that. Okay. Now I will say, okay, if you look at it, actually, it doesn't explicitly say that, but We can probably draw the analysis that if something is missing, you're supposed to go back to chainmail to fill in the gaps for anything not mentioned here. So probably that's the best guess. I guess we should look at chainmail. Does that make sense? We should do that.
Sure. Let's do it.
So now we're looking at the turn sequence initiative rules from the prior game of chainmail. And here now, if zero rules didn't make you happy here in chainmail, you get two. There are two entirely different options that you can pick from, that I guess D&D players could pick from. And version one, the move counter move system, is where you roll a die per side at the start of every turn. And then this is a war game. And so trying to keep things equitable, the turn sequence is side A moves half, and then side B moves half, and then maybe they're shooting, and then side B finishes the move, side A finishes their half move, and then there's more shooting, and then there's melee. Next turn, you re-roll the die every single turn to see who's mover A versus mover B. Now, the second option is called the simultaneous movement system, and this isn't super uncommon in war games, where both sides write everything down on paper. Both sides write everything down on paper in advance. There's no die roll, and both sides simultaneously move their forces as best they can and come to a mutual decision about whether one runs into the other halfway into the move, and then there's shooting and there's melee. So it's interesting you've got one that has a die roll and one doesn't, and one has pre-declarations and the other does not.
My instinct, Dan, from having... I've played a few war games in my day, and my guess is that the second system absolutely never leads to any form of disagreement whatsoever, and it's very clear and concise. Is that true?
Well, it's widely used in some war gaming. I think... I would like to be living in this world. I would like to be living in this optimistic world that you just sketched out. That would be great. I will say that I think that that might make more sense, you know, in a war game scenario where you've got a lot of moving forces and things might be having very large movement rates continually. And what I will say is that if you look in the right place in original D&D, because you know in the original DM's book, they do have sections on aerial and ship combat. And interestingly, in the original D&D aerial and ship combat, they specifically call out for these modes of combat, for air and ship combat, we recommend that you use the written order system. So that specifically so that you can have smoothly moving air units or ship movements. And I do think that can kind of make sense that these aren't things that can start literally start and stop on a dime. I can see how that kind of sort of makes sense. Now, the open question is, does that imply that for normal D&D melee, they would expect you to use the roll a die and not pre-declare system? Does that stand in contrast to what they expect normally? And I can see, you know, I will say that when I've run air combat, I do run into issues of like, you know, apparently stopping, like I get to move my whole thing and attack, and then you get to move your whole thing and attack, does wind up feeling really, really super weird. And I can see why you'd want to do that instead for that kind of situation.
I absolutely get it, right? From a simulationist point, right? If we're trying to simulate real world activity, right? Never in the world does time stop as one group does a thing and then time stop and another group does a different thing, right? Like that back and forth is definitely an invention, a gamist invention to create order where there was chaos.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like that's ultimately that's the problem. I think as we dig into initiative in various systems and whatnot is ultimately the push pull that we're going to see over and over and over again. I think, right. There's this conflict between we want it to feel realistic versus like we don't want to spend the whole game arguing about math and doing, you know, complex, you know, or logistics in our head. You know, I want to play the game. I don't want to be sitting here. So anyway, let me
breeze on a little bit. Not all of us want to do that.
So interestingly, when I was looking this up, right, I opened up. Let me come back to this. So originally, I thought this method of like, here's a couple options. I thought we were going to see this over and over again. Like this is a rule that has been so highly contentious in D&D. I was going to expect that pretty much every edition would have this. I opened up my fifth edition books, and I was surprised to see that it actually is opinionated. It's like, here's the rule in the player's handbook, but then in the DMG, there's like, here's some options. And so then I jumped back to my first edition AD&D books and found quite the same thing. Interestingly, the initiative section in AD&D, right? I was prepared for the worst here. Let me say that. I was prepared for like, oh god, this is going to be so complicated and weird and difficult to parse, and I'm going to be talking about segments and crap like that. What I actually found, I'm in my first edition DMG here, page 62, reading about initiative, and I find this interesting little diatribe by Gary on why group initiative should be used and not individual initiative, right? And in this case, we're talking about, do you roll, if you are assuming you're rolling dice to determine who goes first, do you roll for a whole group or do you roll per individual? And he goes on this lovely little diatribe where he says, while it is not accurate to roll one die for all individuals comprising each party, it is a convenient and necessary expedient. Separate rolls could be made for each member of two small groups, for instance, but what happens to this simple, brief determination if one party consists of 9 characters and 6 henchmen and the other of 7 giants and 19 werewolves, let us say? All of that in a parenthetical, right? Right. So the reason I'm bringing this up is there's this delightful contrast about what to do in the case of ties. So I'm going to zoom ahead here in AD&D, and it says ties. It will often occur that initiative determination results in a tie. This merely indicates that each party has equal chances for acting and attacks occur simultaneously. In case of equal initiative score, damage accrues to both groups regardless of what is inflicted. That's it. So I find it, this has bothered me so in so many editions of D&D, right? Like we try to like construct some system by of turn taking and dice rolling, and then we say, but sometimes there's a tie, in which case, throw it all out the window and do everything simultaneously. That is always
okay.
The biggest
problem with first edition, right, is in this area, right? The single biggest problem with first edition is exactly in this area of initiative and the turn sequence. And the problem is if you look at more and more footnotes to footnotes to footnotes to paragraphs, the initial like turn sequence is very clear. It's not much different than the BX that we enjoy. And then if you hunt in this book, in other places, they'll start to add more and more wrinkles to it that at the end of the day winds up actually being self-contradictory. So there is I don't think this is the same place you were quoting from, Paul, but on page 66, there's a paragraph titled Simultaneous Initiative. And this says, when opponents in melee have tied for initiative, blows occur simultaneously, except when both opponents are using weapons. Now, each weapon has a speed factor, and in the case of otherwise simultaneous blows, now the opponent with the weapon which has the lower speed factor will strike first. Thus, a blow from a fist occurs before a blow from a dagger, 1 versus 2, a dagger before a short sword versus a hammer, and so on and so forth.
Yep, absolutely directly and contradictory to what I just read about ties, not 4 pages earlier in the
yes,
book.
Precisely. Precisely this. And then a couple paragraphs later, there's going to be another paragraph that adds on spell casting times as an additional modifier to that. So that this is exactly the place that many of you, if you want to play first edition AD&D, literally by the letter of the law in the book, it's impossible because the initiative rules specifically contradict each other.
Yep.
And, you know, for I think for many of us, when we picked up first edition, this looked attractive. The weapon speed factors, that's nice. Interacting with the casting time, specifically in the case when your initiative die ties, this seems like an interesting subsystem. And then you get into it, and I think we're both going to conclude that not many people actually do that. Gary says he absolutely did never do that. That's a confusing part of first edition.
I feel like, you know, that I know I'm not going to be able to quote exactly where in the books this happens, but I feel like there are other editions too that go back to this, like what to do in a tie, and then there, you know, there's a lot of shrugging and like, okay, well, you can compare these numbers, or you can reroll dice, or you can make it be simultaneous. And I feel like if you're going to do simultaneous combat, just do that from the beginning, because why do you want to make me adapt to a completely different system of adjudicating combat in a statistically improbable scenario?
You know what? I'll play devil's advocate just for a second. This is not something that I personally do, but I can see there are some, you know, legendary combats where the hero and the anti-hero wind up mutually killing each other. And Arthur and Mordred do that, and Jormungand do that, and I can see someone saying, I want an outside, unusual possibility of the two fighters actually dealing mortal blows to each other. It's not an insane motivation, and yet I agree with you, it's not something I actually ever want to do. Josh in the chat right now, I think, made the point of it's weird. People get upset if on my turn I eliminate the opponent and then the DM says, oh, they get to attack you back, maybe you're dead too. I can see that as a counter argument to that kind of action.
Yeah, I think, and I feel like this is stout, for me, this is stoutly in the area of like rulings, not rules, right? If and when that scenario cuts up, I think that I, as DM, should be empowered to rule some unusual thing. Oh, you both rolled the same number on initiative. It's a dramatic moment. We're about to clash head on head. I want you to both roll the dice at the exact same time. And that's fun. And there's a little tension building and whatnot. But it is definitely, I feel like I am now outside the rules. I am doing an improvisational DM ruling for the sake of drama. That's kind of
I can see that. I can see that. Let me rewind just a little bit, and I'll say that mm-hmm. I think that the fact this is one of these areas in D&D where you have this wide variation over the editions, and I think that it's because there wasn't written anything in original D&D. There's this gap, this lacuna that people, when they're playing original D&D, they had to fill in. Maybe they picked chainmail option A, maybe they picked option B, and this was really fertile ground for people to come up with a bunch of different stuff. Now, I will say that the original D&D Swords and Spells supplement that many of us look to is kind of, you can kind of use it as a errata to original D&D. Swords and Spells is actually the first publication that clearly has one specific initiative and turn sequence rule to it, unambiguously. And that is where it's sort of like Chainmail's first version, except that it changes it that you don't reroll each turn. You roll a d6 at the start of the combat, and then you have side A goes and side B goes. There is no pre-declaration. You don't have to write anything down. And then you just cycle around A versus B, B versus A versus B. And it's really interesting that, you know, so Gary wrote Swords and Spells. Many of us use it to kind of clarify stuff from original D&D. But for some reason, Swords and Spells kind of gets forgotten about. And a lot of the decisions he made there didn't make its way into any other editions because people just overlook it as a source. But it's not, I don't think that's an insane, right? That's a pretty viable, and you just roll at the start and then A, B, A, B, A, B. It's not crazy. It's pretty simple. I don't mind that.
I mean,
but that's actually,
in fact, it's
not
pretty much what I do.
Most editions.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly how I run it these days. And I grant that my choices for how I want to run initiative in classic D&D are built more out of experience than consulting a specific book. And what I have found is I prefer a group roll at the very beginning of combat, never roll again, just go around and around. And I want like to go, and I think you and I have talked about this before, and I think both do the same thing, where I then want to go physically around the table. I just want to start either on my left or right and go in a circle. And when it comes to me as the DM, then I'm going to run all the monsters at that point. And I have a lot of reasons for preferring that. The biggest, of course, is just simplicity, right? Let's get it out of the way and not think about it again. No more rolling, no more comparing stuff, etc. Just going to go around. I also think that actually physically going around the table solves a problem that a lot of the other systems have, which is an obvious, visible predictability, right? If I'm sitting at the table and I see the person, two people to my right, is taking their turn, then I know there's one more person's going to take their turn, then it's going to be me, right? So I know exactly where I fall very easily, and I'm thinking about what I'm going to do. So by the time it does come to me, I've already taken in all of the things that have happened, and I'm ready to go with my action, right? And I think one of the big problems a lot of these systems have, especially when you get into like individual roles and we're writing it down on a list or, you know, maintaining a table of the order of actions or whatnot, that players often lose sight of when their turn is. So now they're just waiting for the DM to call their number or call their name. And when the DM says, it's your turn, now, only now is my attention turned on. And I'm looking at the table to assess, what's happened? What is the state of the combat? And what do I want to do? And that slows things down so much, right? Because each person is going to do that. Stop. Okay, let me stop and think. And okay, now I've decided what my action is going to be.
100% agree. This is a place where Paul and I are 100% totally on the same page. I don't know if we both, now I can't even remember whether we both came to this independently or otherwise. And I totally agree that the clarity to everybody about what the initiative order is incredibly helpful. Not needing extra equipment to track or document or do record keeping is incredibly important. And it's really fascinating. It's what we have written in our original edition Delta rules as how we're going to do a turn order around the table. And it's really fascinating. This is not what the text rule is in any version of D&D. No published version of D&D has, to my knowledge, has ever said go around the table in the order that people are sitting. To me, it simplifies things so much. I believe, maybe I've only seen it once. We have seen it, and this kind of highlights another advantage, when we were sitting in a Bill Webb game of Rappanathic with other 24, 27 people, is that it easily scales. Just sit some more bodies down the room and you can just go around the 30 people or whatever. It easily scales without having to have an entire page full of documentation about what the sequence order is. So I like that a lot too.
I mean, and you know, I think another advantage is simply that if you've ever played with anyone who's even remotely unfamiliar with how role-playing games work, they probably played Monopoly at some point or some other board game, and that's how all those games work, right? Mm-hmm. So there's an easy familiarity that people just feel very natural about it. I think one of the biggest pushbacks that we get to this is mostly from modern gamers who, you know, when you start looking at, say, maybe third edition and later, where they more and more start leaning into, but my character matters. My character should matter, right? If my character is quick, right? If I'm playing a character who is incredibly nimble and incredibly perceptive and quick on their feet, they should go sooner. I shudder to hear myself saying these words, right? But like I can totally hear a fifth edition player saying, but I built my character to go fast and win initiative. That's my gimmick. That's my thing, right? That's my build, is to be the one who always goes first.
And if that's built into the rules, I feel that it's hard. I totally get that. I actually think another advantage of the team-based initiative is that it keeps focus on the teamwork. You can, you know, in my table, if you ask, like, I'm going to go around the table order by default. But if someone asks, can I have them go before me or can I have them boost me up? I go, yes, let's do that as an exceptional case. And the thinking is, what can we do jointly with our mutual capacities as a team to solve this problem? And it's not highlighting individuals in competition for the spotlight, which is what I think a problem that you get into in later editions of D&D. Now, to be clear, and let's just briefly map out the sequence of that, right? First edition clearly had side-based initiative. Second edition, and I had to remind myself about this, also had side-based initiative with a bunch of modifiers and an option, a variant, for if you want to do individual initiative, we can support that if you like. And then as of third edition, they made individual initiative the core rule, and that's been the case in third, fourth, fifth edition ever since. Yeah. And you're right. You've got these powers, you've got these feats, you've got these abilities that are made to tie into that rule, and that is a hard thing to disentangle if you want to do it our way, third edition later.
Yep, totally agree. Let me run something by you here. So I'm looking at the 5th edition Dungeon Master's Guide here, and it's giving me variants for initiative. Now, its default is just as you said, right? It's an individual role, and it's based on a stat. It's based, I think, on your dexterity, right?
Dexterity
so
check.
Gives a couple,
same sense, 3rd edition.
Gives a couple of options here, and one is side initiative. And it gives you the exact logic that we're giving here, right? It says, recording initiative for each PC and monster, arranging everyone in the correct order, and remembering where you are in the list can bog down the game. Yep, totally agree. If you want quicker combats, at the risk of those combats becoming unbalanced, try using side initiative. Now, the interesting thing that it gives you as side initiative is, each side rolls a d20, and then it says, when it's a side's turn, the members of that side can act in any order they choose. What do you think about that?
That, I think, is the implication of any standard like side-based initiative. They never specify any order other than the side takes its actions. Yeah, chainmail, first edition, BX, there's never any specifier other than they get to do their stuff. Now, again, right, you're playing a war game and I'm a single player controlling 7 or 8 or 10 forces. Obviously, I can decide whatever order I want my forces to go in. So I think that DNA coming from a war game kind of makes sense that they didn't bother to specify. What else would
a slight variation of this in BX, right? So in BX, you're using side initiative, right? Combat sequence here in B24 is as each side rolls for initiative. The side that wins acts first and then performs actions in this order, right? Morale check, movement, missile fire, magic, melee. Right. And I know, I think we've had debates in the past here. Does that mean that, Or maybe there's some confusion about whether or not that means you're grouping all characters to do something like in a simultaneous everyone does missile, no, simultaneous everyone does magic. It definitely, the breakdown definitely says then, Sen, after all of that chunk, it says the side with the next highest initiative acts second and so on using the order given above. So I think it's pretty clear there that even though it's side-based, that the side is doing all of these things. I guess the debate, right, is like, am I as an individual supposed to do things in this order, movement, missile, magic, or do we as a group? And even then, if we're as a group, okay, all missile fire, two or three of us are all shooting bows, then what order do those bow attacks go in? Now we're right back in the soup where we were at the beginning.
It's a sufficiently sticky issue that I believe we had an entire episode just on that question, on phase-based turn sequences just on that issue. I think you can ask the same question in first edition has a sequence that has the exact same question mark you might ask. I've always assumed that, it doesn't say any ordering other than that. So I've assumed within a phase, the characters could go in whatever order they like.
Now, Dan, I want to bring up. Sorry, there was a nice comment if I can find it here. Oh dear, I may have lost it. May have scrolled off already. Here we go. Vino Azul says we're still forgetting that missile round is outside of initiative. Now you've experimented with this, right? Of like, do all missile combat first? I mean, haven't you tried that out?
Okay, something like that, and you know the chainmail. The chainmail type sequencing has phases of you move half, shoot, move half, shoot more maybe than melee, things like that. So I have and see, Paul, I got this is where I'm going to wind up talking about this other topic. Is you know first edition is unique. So early editions of D&D, like, and also what happens with spellcasting is what I'm getting at. So early editions generally agree that you cannot move and cast. And that's another place where modern players are surprised when we maybe enforce that rule. So chainmail, swords and spells, BX, first edition, second edition, everybody agrees you can't move at all, can't do any gentle walk and cast a spell. And also that you can't cast while you're confronting an opponent in melee, by which we mean in toe-to-toe, hand-to-hand combat with somebody trying to do you harm. Cannot do that. So first edition tries to loosen that up a little bit by saying maybe you can get a spell off when you're in melee, but you're going to have to pre-declare the spell, then check for initiative, and then we'll determine whether you get hit first or not, is what they do in first edition. So I've tried to echo that kind of stuff. If for a while in my OED games, I was going around the table specifically saying, do you want to cast a spell and what is it? And then we'll roll initiative and determine whether that works or not. And I found that, and I think for a while I was also doing missile fire before the first round of combat. And I found that to be a huge drag because most of the people going around the table, they're all going, no, nothing, nope, nothing, I don't. And you get this like negative energy as you go around to check for the advanced spellcasting or missile fire. That's kind of a drag. People forget that that's what's happening. So then they'll say, well, I want to stab with my spear or I want to strike with my axe. And I have to say, that's not what we're doing now. That's not what I'm asking about. I'm just asking about spellcasting or missile fires. So that's a drag to have to do a no smackdown on it. And the overall, it's delaying the actual action because with anything else, you can say, I swing my axe and go, this is what happens. You hit him in the helmet or you totally whiff and miss. And at least something active and dynamic is happening in real time as we're talking about it. So I think I tried to do that for maybe a year or two. It just wasn't working. It was a stutter step. The pacing wasn't right. It was some negative energy, and I personally abandoned it. So I don't do that anymore. But I tried. I swear I made a real honest try at pre-declaring the spells as a adjudication for that.
It's, you know, I think the thing that both you and I are, I think we'll agree on here is that what I'm looking for in combat is, you know, these are the most high intensity action moments of the game. And I want the energy at the table to reflect that, right? I want things to move quickly. And so any extra rules, any extra mechanics or logistics that get in the way of that and take you out of that headspace, I think are, you know, you should get rid of them because it just drags the experience down. We've already hit this moment in the game where the clock time in the game versus the clock time in the real mm-hmm. world is vastly disparate, right? The game is moving almost in slow motion. And slowing that down more is just painful, in my opinion.
I totally agree. That's where I'm at too. And you know what? I've had you know, just as a related issue, like I have tried, you know, like I constantly have a problem with spears. If you run at me and I've got a spear, shouldn't I be able to hit you first? That's what would actually happen. But I've tried to do that in games, and then it turns into like a Magic the Gathering interrupt thing. The player needs to be knowledgeable enough to say, hey, I've got a spear, I should be able to hit them first. That totally doesn't work for new players at all. So that's another complication in the sequencing that I've also abandoned. I have tried to make it work, and it just doesn't work at my tables.
I wonder if it will be enjoyable at this point to go and look at some initiatives outside of D&D. Let's talk about how some other games do it, and maybe you can react to each other about interesting or unusual ways and whether that's good or bad or indifferent.
We should.
Yeah, okay, great. You mentioned at the beginning, just before we started the show, you mentioned Savage Worlds, which you know I ran for a long time. And Savage Worlds uses a card-based initiative system, where I have a deck of cards, standard deck of cards, and I deal everyone a card, and then I count down from ace to two, and that's your initiative order. And there is a specific order of suits. People end up with the same card.
That was my question. That was one of my questions.
Yep.
Therefore, yep. No ties possible. Is that right?
No ties are possible. No ties are possible.
Great.
Ultimately, I will say in Savage Worlds that this is the same as individual dice rolling, right? It's we're using cards, which is clever. And I want to think that maybe there's something special if you get handed an ace. I can't remember exactly. It's been a while. But... But still, nevertheless, maybe a joker, right? But it's still ultimately the same. It still is a different random number generator, but it's still ultimately the same as everybody just roll a die. With the exception of, you're right, that like it eliminates ties. I guess it eliminates ties, so that's nice. The interesting thing to me about this is a mechanic that it inherits from its predecessor, Classic Deadlands, which was a Wild West with a supernatural elements game. And one of the things I loved about Deadlands is it had a lot of weird intricacies that were meant to be evocative of the setting. So the fact that it used playing cards was, you know, it's Wild West, right? Like, there's a lot of gambling. Like, this makes sense that you would use playing cards. In Deadlands, what you actually did for initiative is you made a skill check. You made a quickness skill check.
Oh.
And for every success and raise, you got a card. So that meant
I see.
You might get more than one action per round. And in fact, if you're particularly skilled, you're definitely going to get multiple actions. But where the actions happen might be staggered.
Got it.
Which is just clever, a really interesting kind of wrinkle to the game, I think.
And okay, as a non-expert, I'm going to, for viewers that don't know what like roll and raise means, right? Those games have a dice pool mechanic. You possibly roll a bunch of dice. They may possibly explode on you. And I believe like every multiple of four is a success. So if you get four or five, you get one card in that system. If you get an eight, you're going to draw two cards, I think. So every four, eight, 12 gets you additional bonuses.
Sort of, except that one of Savage Worlds represented a very much streamlining simplification of Classic Deadlands.
Okay.
Classic Deadlands notoriously is a little more complicated. So in Classic Deadlands, you have a target number, which may or may not be four, and successes and raise are increments of that target number. So in this case, actually, you're looking for increments of 5. And it will vary from roll to roll what the success and raise. It got complicated. And the ruling here was, because they didn't want anybody to have no actions, is that you got one card for free. You get one card for free, and then an extra card for succeeding, and then an extra card for each raise on top of that.
Okay.
So if you had a very high quickness and you get a very big roll, you might get a whole bunch of actions that run.
Now, Jerry in the chat asked the question, which I think I would want to ask as well. Doesn't the passing of the cards out delay the start of the turn, slow things down a little bit?
Everything I've just said makes it slower, right? Yes. Dealing cards makes it slower. Having to make a dice check first makes it slower. And we have to do it every round because the cards get swept, right? So it's not like you can't just set the initiative and go. Every round we're rolling dice, and every round I'm dealing cards, and then I got to do the countdown. Anybody on ace, king, queen, and then also the mental gymnastics of I have a queen. Oh, I also have a queen. Okay, which suit do you have? I have a spade. I have a heart. Which one's better? I don't remember. Let's look it up. Yeah,
great.
Everything about that slows stuff down. Great. I love that it sounds that it was evocative of the setting, but.
There's so many systems that look great on the page, right? Oh, yes, my skills feed in and it's cards and you may or may not get multiple actions. This sounds so great on the page. There's a lot of systems like that that I've been with people like running for the first time. Okay, they're not the author. They get a published book. And the second we start interfacing with that, everybody at the table, including the DM, goes, I don't like this. This is more complicated than I want. Let's just abort this rule. And I feel like that's in the ballpark of a bunch of stuff that is soon, the second you start to actively do it at the table, nobody likes it. I'm sure there are people that love that particular mechanic, but it feels like you're gonna regret it.
You know, cards are always near and dear to my heart. There's something about the extra physicality about them that I like. They're different than the dice. I'm rolling dice for other stuff, but I use cards for this thing. I don't know. I think there'll always be a part of me that's slightly nostalgic for this. And just when Deadlands came out, I was at a certain place in my life that I was absolutely ready for that game. They'll always be slightly nostalgic for it. But yeah. Yeah, I think I'd still rather just do group initiative and go around the table. I'd still use that. Probably end up house ruling that in, right? That's usually what I end up doing. What other games, Dan? What other games do you want to talk about? I got a few.
So what I was looking at. Yeah. So I'm certainly most familiar with stuff from TSR in the 70s and 80s. So I kind of browsed through some of that stuff. And one thing I'll say is that we rapidly discarded it, and we could have an argument about this. Is that all the other TSR games uniformly required pre-declarations of some sort. And they usually, not all the time, used individual initiatives. So Boot Hill, the Western game that came out the same year as original D&D in 1974, what they do there is everybody moves kind of simultaneously, okay? Then everybody has to declare what they're shooting at. Then we determine initiative not by rolling dice, but by a mathematical formula. And then you go through, which includes like a character ability and what weapon you have, whether you're moving, whether you're wounded, stuff like that. And then you go through in order from fast to slowest on the shot, according to that, which is kind of interesting. Now, Star Frontiers, which I've been running a game for about a year, the rule in the book is that you roll both sides. You roll for side-based initiative, which is a D10 plus somebody's reaction modifier. Mm-hmm. Determine who's A, what side's A, what side's B. Then both sides pre-declare what they're going to do after the initiative roll, and then side A does its stuff, and side B does its stuff, and then you roll each turn like that. Which is kind of interesting. And then I also looked at the Marvel Superheroes game from 84. And again, and that is a game that I think of as, it's supposed to be comic book simple. It's supposed to be any non-gamer is supposed to be able to sit down at this. The book is written very, very coloring bookish, right? And nonetheless, they still have both sides pre-declare their actions, and then you roll side-based init, both sides move and attack, and you keep re-rolling each turn, I believe. Is that what happens? So I was very surprised that the designers loved the pre-declaration and usually and frequently individual initiative, because as far as I can tell, every game that TSR produced, and D&D didn't have this at the time, but every other game required pre-declaration and then some kind of initiative roll, which is surprising. No, I don't. Do they do that in Marvel Super Heroes? No, I don't. That's the first thing I yank out when I come to one of these games.
Yeah. As I think I mentioned to you off camera, and I'll say it here, is I kind of feel, and I'm going to get a lot of backlash in the chat about this, I'm sure. But
you are. I kind of feel like
as a gamer that I'm being gaslit about this whole pre-declaration thing. I hear about it all the time, and I've seen it exactly zero times at the table. And I've played a lot of role-playing games over the course of my life. I go to a lot of game conventions. I think by now I would have seen it. I've never seen it. It doesn't really exist. I don't know. Maybe there are certain groups where it's very popular. Maybe I'm just traveling in the circles of people who aren't into that. But I've never seen it.
You asked me the hard question. Have I seen it at a convention? I'm pretty sure I have not. I don't think I've ever sat down at a table where people are asking for pre-declarations. And therefore, the only time I've ever seen it is my failed attempt in original edition Delta of trying to at least do it for the spell casting. And I didn't like it. It felt bad. And I expunged it. And other than that, I actually have never experienced it myself.
I noticed when you're describing Star Frontiers that you said that it's a group role, but that somebody's stat influences it. That is fascinating to me. Who's stat?
Whoever's highest on the on each side.
Because I'm immediately reminded of, even though we both just agreed that BX absolutely uses side-based initiative, there's this lovely bit in here in the Halfling Special Abilities section on page B10 I'm looking at right now that says, when rolling for individual initiative, in parentheses, an optional rule, halflings get plus one. In addition to any dexterity adjustments, where's this optional rule? Where's this optional rule for individual
initiative? I forget about that. It's so easy to forget these optional rules.
Yeah.
Wait,
here we go. In the dexterity table, there's also a column for individual initiative adjustment, optional. This applies only to individual initiative. See page B23. Has my brain just completely glossed over the possibility of individual initiative?
It says pair combat. I believe what we're looking for is right at the end of B23 where it says pair combat optional. The DM may choose... Okay, there's a typo there. The DM may choose to roll initiative for each character and the monsters he or she is fighting instead of for each side. If this is done, the character's dexterity score is used to adjust it. The DM may wish to adjust the monster's initiative rolls for monsters which are very fast.
There you go.
It's a weird header.
Really glossed over it's this weird because to be it has a weird title. Title, and it is like two sentences on the bottom of page B23 that then wrap into two more sentences on the top of 24. So, totally. Easy to miss. But there you go. Totally, there is an optional rule. And I feel like that very thing, that desire to add a character stat, I feel like is the thing that gummed the whole system up. Yeah. Is what pushes people into this direction of wanting individual initiative. Okay, let me hit some other ideas here, Dan, because there was some discussion about this on our Discord just prior to the show. And it was brought up an article where somebody described guerrilla initiative, which I found fascinating. Guerrilla initiative. Who wins initiative? The team with fewer people on it. Whichever side of the combat has less people, they win. What do you think about that?
Interesting. Yeah. Don't hate it. Right? Not, you know, could live with it. Yeah. Don't hate it.
It's interesting kind of like logic around like, well, the smaller, nimbler, you know, more stealthy group is going to always just move faster than the larger, you know, group that's got to organize themselves.
I've seen people just, I've seen some referees just say, human players go first all the time. Player characters, you just always go first, then monsters.
I have used in the past, no. And I think I saw this scroll by in the chat, of a way of dealing that with ties. Players always just win the ties. I don't want to deal with ties.
Okay, yep.
Here's a gimme for you guys. You're a player.
Yep.
You win ties.
Yep.
Go on.
Okay, so let me pitch a variant that I've done in the past that was fun for a while, and I haven't done in a while. Was there was a time where, again, going around the table, I was more hardcore about it. Nowadays, I'm like, you player, you want A to go before B? Yeah, that's okay. We can make that happen. That's okay. We'll, you know, we won't do this every round, but if that's what you like. So I used to be a lot more strict about it. Is you must go in the order that you're sitting. And if you players want to change that order, you've got to switch chairs. And so there were some of my games, you probably recall, where there was a little bit of musical chairs going on. And I also said, it's going to happen before it gets to your turn in the sequence. So occasionally I would have players running from one side of the table to the other to get in the right sequencing. And we were laughing about it. And it was funny. I you know, now I realize not everybody is as I get a little bit more mature myself, not everybody's going to be in the situation where they actually appreciate me forcing them to run around the room for the role-playing game. So I haven't done that in a long time. I have done things where I've said, if you sit at the table in your marching order, I'll give your team a +1 to initiative. I'll give you a bonus to initiative. If you make it easier on me, sit in marching order. Haven't done that recently, but I've done that with modifiers sometimes. Yeah.
The running around the table thing, I've done that as well. Agreed. It's amusing. I think it's amusing once or twice, and then maybe the novelty wears off. Go. And you're like, okay, that was funny once. Let's not do that again. that's good stuff. I have in the past done things where I will break my own initiative rules situationally just because it makes sense, right? The cases where like one of the players kicks in the door and runs in while everybody else is bickering and not paying attention. I think that player gets to go first. I don't care where they're sitting at the table. They get to go first.
I'll usually do
the awkward thing where I'll let them go first and then we'll roll initiative. And if the players win initiative at that point, I'm still going around the table and I'm just going to skip that person because technically they went first. Right. If the players are in a narrow tunnel or something, or they're being forced into some kind of single file where it'd be just super awkward and weird to go in any order, but the order they are actually, you know, in, then I'll do that. And usually at that point, that's a case. Honestly, I don't use miniatures a lot, but that's a case where I want miniatures. Put your miniatures in so I can just look at the miniatures. And so that I can use that as my visual reference for go around the table. Instead, I'm going to go down the miniature line.
And I agree. I do the same with all those kinds of cases. Also, so if someone runs in, is clearly initiating the action, I will try to have them go first. If a player gets ambushed, so a monster comes out by surprise, grabs on to one character in particular, if I remember it, I try to have them respond first before everybody else kind of gathers to respond. So I think those things all make sense situationally, and I totally support that. And I think that having the side-based initiative, frankly, allows that better. If the rules didn't specify exactly what your team's order, and that gives you some flexibility about moving things around to highlight where the action is at the moment. And I think that's all good stuff myself.
Awesome. I got two more weird ones on my list here, Dan, that I want to get in before we run out of time. So I'm told that this comes from Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, the popcorn method of initiative, which is somebody goes first. I'm not sure exactly how you get to determine exactly who goes first. And then they get to say who goes next. So they popcorn from me to you, you popcorn to this person. Right? So each person is choosing who gets to go next, which also interestingly applies to the bad guys. At any point, a player can go, well, now the bad guys go.
Now the
monsters go.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
Isn't that interesting?
Never. That's totally unique. That's fat. I'm glad that was brought up. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. So if no player ever elects to let the NPCs go, then they just go at the end. but the players can decide. Yep, we want the bad guys to go at this point, or not the players. It's fascinating. I've never played with that system, but I'm like, that is interesting, and I almost want to try it again. The problem for me with that is that it breaks the simplicity, the predictability item that I really love. I love the predictability of knowing
turn's
coming up, and you lose that.
We're going to forget at some point. We're going to forget. Has everybody gone? Is it time for the monsters? Because I don't recall whether everybody's gone or not, frankly. And you're going to have to check in on that.
Yeah. You're going to end up with that problem of somebody going like, okay, I've just finished my turn. Oh, I have to popcorn to someone who hasn't gone.
As a player myself, I might honestly like, well, that's the DM's responsibility to determine who's gone and who hasn't. So I'm just going to, Paul, I even if you've actually gone, but I'm just going to throw it back to you, Paul. And it's the DM's going to determine
the DM's responsibility. Not my job. To prevent you from cheating.
I'm not cheating. I just overlooked it. I just overlooked it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Paul, I wouldn't do it while you're refereeing. I would only do it while we are players and somewhat of the referee.
Oh, thanks.
That didn't help my case at all.
No. But the last one I want to mention here is from the Quest RPG. I got my Quest RPG book. I was just before the game. Jeez, that's where my head is. Just before the show, I was like, I wonder what Quest does. And so I pulled it out. Now, Dan, I've only played Quest once, but you played in a long-running campaign of it as a player.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember what the initiative rules are for Quest?
I actually don't, because I think I only had player-facing like character information in front of me. I actually don't think I had the mechanics in front of me. Remind me. What is it?
That is fascinating, because I my gut says that you're going to hate it. Here it is. I'm going to read it to you. And this chapter is addressing the DM. You decide the order of turns for both the players and the NPCs. Do whatever makes the most sense in the context of the story. That's the rule.
Okay.
Make it up, DM.
Wow. I wonder what the heck we did. I don't recall that. I actually think we just rolled a d20 on each side. I think that, and again, it was our friend Max that was running the game.
Yeah.
I think that he resorted to just, you know, standard d20. I think we both just rolled a d20, I believe, and had the sides go like that, I think. What is the game that, there's some game, and again, Max was running it at some point, wherein, I don't know, there's like a bag of tokens, and like, if I've got five player characters, five yellow tokens go in the bag. If I've got three goblins, three blue tokens go in the bag. And you draw out tokens, and if it's yellow, the players can pick who they want to go. And if it's blue, one of the goblins goes, or something like that. What am I thinking of?
I have never played that, but my spidey senses say Troika?
Troika. Okay, it sounds like we're agreeing with that. Okay.
I've never actually played
Vino Azul agreed.
I don't know.
Yeah. We must have been playing some Troika-based game for a while. Which is interesting, but again, you need more equipment. The goblins are going separately. DM's got to context switch back to them over and over again.
No predictability. Does it generate the problem that it's potentially that there's a player who just doesn't get to go round after round after round?
That would happen. That actually would happen.
That is fascinating. Yeah. And I assume that was lauded as a you know, feature, not a bug.
Yeah, agreed. But, it
seems weird to me. I don't know.
And then before the game/show started, we were also mentioning Burning Wheel, right? Burning Wheel, related games like Mouse Guard, and I have, and I'm glad you reminded me, I actually have played Mouse Guard within the year here, and so what happens there is you pre-plan three rounds of activity on each side, and the players and the referee plan out, like, my next three rounds. You have a small number of options there. It's either attack, defend, feint, maneuver, something like that. So on a piece of paper, you map out your three things, And then basically the activity happens simultaneously as you compare the actions on each side on a table, and some combinations are better and some combinations are worse, is how they do it in Burning Wheel. So different, interesting. Again, you need paper. You are pre-declaring a couple rounds in advance. So there's a moment where everybody sits down with a piece of paper and maps out their things, and then we're looking at the matrix to see what happens. So took a couple more beats in that regard.
I don't know. Burning Wheel is a game that has always just struck me as being much more, much higher complexity than the game I actually want to play, unfortunately. So I'm not surprised.
And I believe we were playing a reduced version too, because I think if I recall, the whole Mouse Guard matrix had like a 7x7 or 8x8 matrix, and our referee was like, "I'm going to cut this down to just a 4x4 matrix to make it easy as you learn the system. Maybe we'll add the rest of it later." So you're totally right about that.
Yeah, it's a shame because I do love the setting, but and I own the Mouse Guard book, and yet I've never played the thing.
I hear that. It's a great setting.
Dan, we are just about out of time here. Any final thoughts on initiative?
Well, this is one of the rather unusual cases where I think Paul and I are 100% totally in agreement on what makes for a good game, even though it's technically hasn't been in any published version of D&D ever, which is a really interesting, weird thing that we have, mutually discovered, I think, is I think Paul and I, we both like it to be simple. We like it to be fast-paced. We like the action to be clear to players. We don't want extra equipment, record-keeping, documentation. We entirely avoid pre-declarations. We like side-based initiative, and it allows you to focus on the teamwork. It allows the players to work out combinations to their advantage, which I think is all good stuff. Focuses on team communication is important. Scales up to lots of players. I think they're just all kind. You can be flexible when you need to in special circumstances. So keeping it super super simple, just roll once per side, go around the table in order. Can't be any simpler than that, really. And that is in our long experience, our games have gotten better the simpler we make it like that.
It's amusing to me that it is both a thing that we completely agree on and a thing that is not in any book anywhere. But I do feel like we both came to it rather scientifically, right? We didn't sit down and talk this out and say, like, I'm sure we had conversations about it, but we didn't like plan this out of like, let's find the best initiative system. I think we both tried a lot of things and we both landed in the same spot. So to me, that suggests it's a pretty solid method. I think it's pretty reasonable. So it's what I would recommend to anyone starting out and who doesn't have a strong opinion. But also, it is also, I would say, weirdly, one of the mechanics of the game, and a very specific mechanic of the game that is constantly fiddled with from game to game, from edition to edition, from GM to GM. And so I encourage that. If you're DMing, you should play with initiative and find the thing that you love the best. Yeah. And I won't be surprised if it's a group initiative go around the table.
I agree. And they can thank us at whatever point they want to. But I mean, so we're generous.
Yeah. Viewers, if you have opinions on a better initiative system or no different one that you'd like to make us aware of, I know there's at least one more because I see people in the chat talking about it right now. Please leave us a comment in the YouTube video comment section. We'd love to hear from you, and maybe we will have further thoughts at another episode down the line.
Definitely. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, Loops, GitHub, all those kinds of places. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all the sites, so please look for us there and initiate that like button right now.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those files are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. You can also listen to us through various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those third-party sites and it gives the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, big thanks to our patrons who support the show. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. You'll see that every single tier gets you access to our private Discord server, where the conversation continues around the clock, including our live video after chat that we'll be holding in about 10 minutes. Just really great conversation, a really great chat from our viewers. There's more to be said about this topic. So if you get on the live video after chat, we'll really enjoy getting an opportunity to cycle a little bit more about your ideas there. So don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.